Support for Art Talks comes from the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com. And from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from Red Band Coffee Company, local roaster, offering individually prepared coffees, New Orleans-style iced coffee, and whole bean coffee at two locations in Davenport. Information is at redbandcoffee.com.
Well, hello and welcome. You've tuned into a conversation between artists. For the next hour, we'll be exploring the mind and the creativity of our guest. This is Art Talks, and I'm your host, Bruce Carter. Once again, and welcome. Elizabeth Rhodes Reed is our guest today. She's a fabric, three-dimensional paper artist. She currently has a show at the Rene Gray Gallery on Cody Road in LeClaire, as you drive into LeClaire. So on the right-hand side, she has a BA in art and political science from Cornell College, great school. Since graduating, she has pursued many varied career experiences, including teaching in an alternative high school, as a private investigator, a counselor for women, and as a community activist. Very interesting. All during that time, she has continued making art and raising two children. Her work now is textural, involving paper and fabric in various materials. She's exhibited widely in galleries and public art projects and in corporate collections. And again, the show is at the Rene Gray Gallery in LeClaire until the 26th, along with Dawn Wolford. And Elizabeth Rhodes Reed, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure having you, and thanks for driving down from Cedar Rapids and making the journey. Interesting life that you've had. Your work is fascinating. It's surprising. It's wearable not. It has this nice delicacy to it, and yet there's a strength to it. It seems fragile, and yet it's, substantial. And there's an earthiness to it, and yet there's this kind of quality of space and light flowing through it. Very, very interesting stuff. Well, let's go back to early. It's like, how did this start out for you? Were you a painter? Were you a potter, a printmaker?
Actually, I started at age 5 with a paint-by-number kit and loved doing those. Uh-huh. And then it just evolved because I grew up in a small town where you did not have art in the schools. You had private lessons or people that would come and you'd take classes from. And it was, and if you got it in the schools, it was because the teacher herself was interested in art and would offer it in the classes. But then by the time I got in high school, I got involved with art camps, and I lived close enough to Chicago that I could take the train in on the weekend, and I had art friends in there, and so it just kind of evolved.
Nice. You were a painter? Were you a drawer? What kind of things did you do?
I tried everything. I mean, by the time, though, that I got to college, it was definitely into sculpture, but it was sculpture 2D with very rough materials, burlap. In kind of following Alberto Burri, some of his early works. But it was using found materials. I experimented, of course, with oils and watercolors and pastels, and you know, you've got to try everything, ceramics, and then you evolve into what makes you comfortable, or what you feel the best about. And it was, for me, it was always texture. I like the feeling of what you can do with things like burlap and how you add glues or paints, or it just changes everything.
What is it about the texture that's so appealing?
The I want to say the feel of it, the look of it. It just is.
Textural quality?
Yeah, the textural, yeah. And how you can change and how it transforms itself.
True. I completely agree. I work with oil pastels, and I like getting a little thickness of the oil pastel. I like that little bit of texture mm-hmm. that shows through and the of the slurp of oil paint. You know?
Right. Well, and when you're using burlap, you can also form it.
Oh.
Yes. If you're using these glues, you can form it, and it becomes 3D. Because when you're first getting started in art, you think, oh, you're only 2D. 3D, it's an evolution.
Huh. Did you ever do clay?
Yes. Very unsuccessfully. I do not have the eye-to-hand coordination because at that point, all they had were the wheels, were no electric wheels, and I couldn't do the feet. I couldn't do the kick and hold the clay. But I also cannot type either. So, you know, it's one of those eye-to-hand coordinations that's just...
Sometimes the limitations are good. They force you in a certain way.
I mean, I can do raku, but...
Oh.
But that's... That evolved when I got more into 3D, when I really completely left 2D.
Interesting, because I almost avoided 3D coming up. I was like a flat surface paper. I could intimate miles and miles... In a landscape on paper, you could go back in space, and yet to actually make an object that inhabits space was a new experience for me. I didn't get into it until maybe 30 years ago.
No, some of my – at Cornell, you always had a senior thesis, and my show was – it was all 3D, but it was because of the professors would always point out, instead of just saying, oh, this whole piece is terrible, they would – focus in on some small little section and say, why don't you keep looking at this or look at this person or explore more? Mm-hmm. There was no limitations. There wasn't, you know, like, you must copy this style. You must do this certain style. Just, you know, you were just pushed for a flow. Trying. Oh.
Yeah. Who were your teachers then?
Professor Lifson. All of a sudden I'm forgetting her name. Vivian Haywood.
Uh-huh.
And Doug Hansen.
Doug Hansen.
Yes.
Sure. And they all came out of Iowa? Were they Iowa people?
Or? No.
No?
Hugh Lifson was from New York.
Ah, interesting.
And in like the first year there, he brought in someone that did, took an axe to a piano with a chicken and blood and feathers, and it was a...
Happening.
Yes, it was.
Uh-huh.
Well, it was a different time. Let's put it that way.
It was a different time. I remember those times well myself.
Yes, when they stormed the campus of Cornell and the police took the state troopers took people away in the buses. Yeah, there was the first month I was at Cornell, there was an overtaking of the main administration building. It was a political thing.
It was. I remember those times. You were a political activist too. Were you involved?
Right. Sideline. I was a freshman. I'd been there a month. You know, it was one of those things where you're kind of like,
what's
okay,
going on?
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. What did your teachers teach you besides flow? I mean, what gift did they give you?
Freedom. They gave you freedom. And they gave you guidance. They did not say, okay, you must absolutely do this. Because I started, when I came back to Cedar Rapids, I thought, oh, I'm going to maybe look at an MFA at Iowa. And so I started to take some classes. And this was graduate. And all they wanted was for me to follow what they were doing.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, this is not creative. I mean, I had better teachers in undergraduate. And so I thought, I'll just teach myself.
Huh. And that's what you did.
Yes.
That's what you did. Was it a jump for you to get into the... forms and styles that you are now working in now?
No, it's all very natural. I mean, it's I live in the woods. I'm very, very in tune with nature and the way things look and how they feel. See, once again, we're coming back to textures because that's what's out in nature, in the woods. There's textures everywhere.
Interesting. Speaking with Elizabeth Rhodes Reed, who has a show now at the Rene Gray Gallery on Cody Road, and as you come into LeClaire on the right-hand side. The other jobs that you had, these psychological jobs, these counseling women, these being a detective, these working in an alternative high school, did that have any effect in your work? Did that kind of dovetail in or tributary into your work, those experiences?
Probably they do, but also it's something that I've always been very concerned with and very involved with, because the first job I actually had was working in an alternative high school. That's when they were just beginning the schools. And these were kids that were passed through. And you will find teachers that say, yep, I'm not going to deal with that child. I'll just move them up to the other grade. Most of these kids could not read or write, and we're talking juniors and seniors in high school. And the only reason they were there is because they could also get their Social Security check, so they didn't really want to be there either. But it was just like, okay, I was supposed to be teaching them social studies, but they needed to learn how to fill out a job application. They needed, you know, some basic life skills, and that was more important than social studies. Or what type of jobs could they get with the skills they had, or what training and programs were available to them. So that's where I think art at that point kind of took a back seat, because I was realizing schools, the mainstream schools, are meant for the kids that are going to obey, that are going to do all the rules completely correct. These are the kids that are forgotten and just shuffled through, and no one really, you know, cared about them. And it was, but it was interesting, because now the alternative schools now have become more regulated. We worked out of a grocery store front. You know, we had little cubbies where we would work with the students. We worked with each student was individual, because they were all at a different level, so we had lesson plans for each one. And we were also responsible for the counseling, you know, showing up with them for their court dates or making sure that they could, whatever information they needed. I mean, we were all fairly young too, as they were young. But I mean, you know, you have a 13-year-old girl that goes, I'm pregnant. How did I get pregnant? I mean, and then the other girls that are 17 or 18 that have a baby, and they're going, you realize you get paid for that? If you have a baby, you can get paid for that.
And you're there to guide them, guide them along.
Yep. And to answer the questions, take care of everything that they needed.
That would put your art in the background. Your art away.
It did for a couple of years, and then moved back to Cedar Rapids, and that's when then I decided I was going to pursue more of the art world.
Huh. Big jump. Did it take you a while to get back in shape? Was it rusty for you?
No, because I had a lovely room that had windows on both sides, so it was perfect for a studio, but it was a real eye-opener to go to classes, and people were treating the students like, either you copy our style, each professor was saying, either you copy our style or, you know, you're not any good. And I couldn't understand that at a graduate level, that the stifling of creativity. I know it's completely changed now, but that was back in the middle 70s. So,
I'm surprised.
I was very surprised too, but then, maybe it was a discipline type of thing. But I didn't last long with it, because I knew that that was not.
For you, yeah. How was it being out of school and doing work? I mean, you had no other students, you had no other teacher around you, so you're basically on your own.
Which is the best way to learn.
Ah, very good.
There is so much information out there that you can teach yourself. I mean, there are some basics, but I'd already had the basics. I mean, I knew all the basics. And I think when you're teaching yourself or learning yourself, you have freed yourself, because you're not tied into what exactly a professor will tell you. But then at Cornell, I always had that freedom, and I guess I wasn't seeing it at the graduate level, so it was just more
of the same.
Yeah.
So there was no problem at all.
No.
Did you go and check in with your old teachers?
from Cornell?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see them, yes, quite often.
Hmm.
Or they'll call me about something or tell me about something, or I'll run into them at an opening. I mean, well, we've got close proximity, too. We've got Mount Vernon and Cedar Rapids. And so you are going to have a tendency to run into
your old folks.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's good. It's great to maintain that relationship with your teachers. I did that for probably 20, 30 years after college, too. I still would go back and visit them and stay with them and pass through town. You'd go out for a bite.
Right, right. I mean, they'll call me, oh, did you read this article? Or, hey, I saw your show here. Or this person has written a review about you. And, you know, and you're not even aware of these things.
Uh-huh.
But it's just, it's really an affirmation that, yeah, I did do the right thing. And I really appreciate the small, the relationship you have in a small college.
Oh, right, right. And you still lived close enough to them so you could see them all the time.
Right, or you run into them at shows.
How interesting. Elizabeth Rhodes Reed is with us. She's living in Cedar Rapids. She has a show at the Renee Gray Gallery in LeClaire, right on Cody Road on the right-hand side as you walk in. They're open Tuesday through Sunday. Let's take a pause right now. Oh,
yeah.
Wednesday through Sunday. That was my mistake. So let's take a pause right now, and we'll be right back after this gallery guide.
On exhibit around the WVIK listening area at the Cattage Gallery in the Galvin Fine Arts Center on the St. Ambrose University campus in Davenport through September 5th, the 10th annual Cattage Exhibition. This year's theme, Home. Hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. At the Figge Art Museum at 225 West 2nd Street in Davenport through August 3rd, a movable museum, works from the UIMA School Programs Collections. Through September 7th, Innovators and Legends, Generations in Textiles and Fiber. Through September 7th, Local Threads. Through September 14th, From Pencil to Printed Page, Arthur Geisert's Thunderstorm. And through April of 2015, A Legacy for Iowa. Hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Thursday. At Midcoast at Center Station on River Drive in Moline through the end of July, Acrylics by Susan Moore. Hours are 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 on Saturday, 9 to 5 Sunday. At Midcoast Gallery West on 2nd Avenue in Rock Island through the end of August, photography by Heidi Brandt and acrylics by Leanne Westcott. Hours are 11:30 to 5:30 Wednesday through Saturday. At Quad City Arts at the Airport in the Moline International Airport through August 30th, paintings by Roy Kasich and wood carvings by Bill Wolford. At the Quad City Botanical Center at 2525 4th Avenue in Rock Island through the end of July, Flamingo Follies, Monday through Saturday from 10 to 5, Sunday noon to 5. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area.
On our talks, Elizabeth Rhodes Reed is with us, elizabethrhodesreed.com, if you want to follow along. Her work is terrific. Elizabeth, let's talk about your process. Let's talk about how you work and how an object starts off in your head or in your heart or in your fingers and then proceeds out. How do you know what to do? How do you make decisions on it? The zipper piece that's out in the show, the very long zipper piece.
Zipper piece.
It's almost, how did that come about?
I was having to wait for someone for a long period of time. So I thought, oh, I'm going to teach myself how to knit because it was I was in a waiting room situation. So it's you can't be doing any real art there. But I thought, oh, I'll teach myself how to knit. And all I had was paper cord and some dowel rods. And then I just started knitting and I realized, oh, this kind of passes the time. And then it became larger. The white knit piece became larger and larger and larger. And I'm thinking, well, what am I going to do with this? And then I thought, oh, you know, if I put a zipper in it and then I start putting brown paper cord through it, it's going to evolve into something else. And in fact, the piece that you're talking about, it's on a stand at Rene Gray, but it can be taken off the stand and morphed into many other things. And the zipper can, you know, completely, it's one of those two-way zippers, and it can completely be moved around and it becomes, you can make it other little sculptures out of it.
I would almost hate to touch it, though.
Oh, no. See, those things are not, they're not fragile. Because inside, where I've clipped and put all the brown paper cord through the holes, then I put weld bond glue on it. So it does have, you know, there is some permanence to it. I'm sure a few will slip through the side, but, you know, it's as many as I put on there. There's no problem with it.
How did you know what to do? How did you know what to do next? How did you know to put paper cord on it?
It's just what I felt. I feel these things. My studio is full of discards that people don't want. I use a lot of abject items.
What does that mean, abject items?
Things that have been thrown away, worthless, whatever. Like, there's a large piece at Rene Gray, Salvageable Remains, and it's these 4-inch shells. And I say, do people know what these are? It's fireworks that did not completely explode right. And you can see the little tag on it with the Chinese writing, which is probably the chemical, you know, whatever gunpowder they needed to put in it. But these were the fragments of fireworks that did not explode correctly. And when they had a huge convention down at the Amanis, I went down there and went through their garbage. Well, it was a huge pile of garbage. And you find all these things. In fact, down at Rene Gray, there are other little sculptures that are of firework pieces. People will call me when they get stuff in of, I've got this fascinating cardboard. Would you like it? Oh, I take it. I mean, so I have all these different things in my studio, and it's just, see, I see art in everything, though. It's just how you view it and how you're going to use it. I mean, everybody else was, you know, they make the pyrotechnicians clean up all the firework stuff because they said it's just trash. Well, you look at this stuff and you put in a little polyacrylic on it and it becomes a beautiful sculptural piece.
And you're always looking for that. You have a poetic sensibility for the remains of things.
Yes. Oh, I love finding things, bones, whatever. And it's how you use them. Maybe things will never be used. I did one time, I collected a bunch of the styrofoam heads that people use to put the wigs on or stylish use. And then I realized, oh, if you turn those upside down, put some polymer reinforced mortar on it, and then you put something on top of it, you've got a lovely sculptural bowl so I've got, you know, plastic heads or styrofoam heads sitting around. I mean, I've used styrofoam and stuff, which is if you put polymer reinforced mortar on that, you've got a lovely piece of sculpture for outside that is not heavy. I mean, you've got to put it on a stand so that it stays. And you've got a lovely piece of sculpture that's really not very heavy. The only problem is I found, since I live in the woods, there must be a salt or something component in it. Because the woodpeckers, even if it's you've got acrylic and it's completely sealed, the woodpeckers will kind of drill into it.
How interesting. Not making very much sound into the styrofoam.
No. But, I mean, well, I've got probably a half inch of polymer-reinforced mortar on it.
Oh, that makes a difference then.
Well, I think that's what they're going after because there's got to be something in that.
Potassium or something that they want to pick up on. Maybe it's the salt or something, a kind of salt.
Who knows,
yeah. So you're always looking for stuff to have. To find, you're a collector of stuff, abject items.
Yes.
They all are arranged in your studio. Do you have a certain alphabetical arrangement, or big to small, or by colors, or how did you toss in?
They go in boxes. The boxes are labeled, and they're in the garage. I have a mannequin in the garage. I have a whole bunch of different boxes in the garage. Because sometimes, and I have shelves of things, there are things hooked to the wall, but sometimes you get too much stuff, and that's why I have them in like banker's boxes and labeled, because sometimes there's just too much of a visual, and then all of a sudden everything gets jumbled together. You're not able to separate out what you're doing. Actually, what I probably should do is just stop and clean up the studio. Because if you get so jumbled, you have a hard time focusing because you're going, oh, well, maybe I'll try that. And you start picking up this and start playing with that. But I keep stuff on the walls. The walls are fairly covered with stuff. And a couple of open shelves, but the rest of it I try and keep contained. Otherwise, too much impact. Right.
But that's kind of what you want. You want pieces to go together in a surprising way.
Yes and no. I mean, I know where everything is, and it just helps me to, because then I start thinking, oh, I want to do this with that, and then I want to do this with that, and then I have a problem focusing.
Too many different things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever do something not knowing where it's going to go?
All the time.
Pick it up later?
Well, yeah, sometimes it's 3 and 4 years. Something will just sit there and you go, and it doesn't come to you until maybe you've tried something else and then all of a sudden it comes to you. And then, you can't push it. I mean, if it's not there, it's not there, and it's going to look like it. I mean, sometimes my best works are the ones that have been accidents where you just say, oh, I don't care anymore. I cannot, you get so involved with a piece that it overwhelms you and it scares you. And then you just have to, you're not going to control me, and just let it go. And the best pieces come out.
You let it go then and you send it off, or you turn it to the wall?
No. I think, what do I have to lose if I do this to it?
Oh.
The piece is already, I don't like it, and so if I try something new,
The pieces for me that I have the most problems with are very often the pieces that turn out the best.
Mm-hmm. But sometimes, if the piece is controlling the process, then it's not going to go anywhere.
Right.
You have to just say, it's not good now, and so why not experiment? Why not give this a try?
Do you and the piece that arrive at a conclusion together, or do you dominate the piece?
No, I think we arrive together.
Uh-huh. Me too.
Sometimes
the pieces tell you what they need.
Well, and the thing is that I do so many different types of work that, some are very composed and serene, but some are not. I mean, when you get into the woven wall pieces that are knotted and gnarled.
Those woven ones.
Yes.
Talk about those.
Those are old duvet covers, pieces of fabric that are just, you're either going to throw it out or you're going to wash the car with it. But so they're being recycled. I've recycled old jeans. That was a war protest that Well, everything has been recycled. And the glue that I use on these, it takes the thinnest of fabrics and turns it into a really hard, hard shell. And then you're adding acrylic and your polyacrylic, and you're adding these things to it. And these pieces become just firm, very firm, and they can be even outside in the rain.
Hmm.
I mean, they're completely sealed.
Hmm. And what is it with the interweaving of things? What does that mean?
Yeah, it's just kind of life. I mean, it's, you know, everything is really connected to one another. And it's how life is. I mean, you know, we're all in this together. We've all, you know, come from something, you know, and by moving us all together, we make a much stronger bond. Like, I'm using these old tattered duvets, and so you've got, you know, the strength by even just weaving them together makes them a stronger piece.
Mm-hmm. And the interweaving of the two in the two directions makes them even stronger.
Yes.
Huh. I've felt that life is kind of a collage like a fabric collage of interweavings going mm-hmm. back and forth. And how long did it take you to realize that, or was that something that you knew off the bat?
That's something I've always kind of felt.
Uh-huh.
I've always been, well, I think, involved with counseling. Because, as I said, that first job out of college was in the alternative high school, and we had to be counselors. And then I did a lot of counseling for other things.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, because I'd gotten involved with domestic abuse, you know. So there was, you're realizing how you all connect and work with one another.
Perfect.
Or help one another.
Yeah, perfect, yeah. And that all goes into your mm-hmm. art. Yeah. Does your art affect your counseling?
I don't do counseling anymore.
You don't?
No. I've done, I just do a lot of art now. I've gotten involved with a art group, and we try to do shows. And I've just been busy, you know, raising the wild cats that come to the door and say, "Hey, I'm feral. Make me into a domestic cat." I do that.
Huh.
And making sure that the two kids grew up and can support me in my old age, since I'm an artist.
Right, you are. Yeah. Did you ever regret being an artist? Did you ever think, I should have done something else?
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah. Because it's a hard life. You've got to be self-disciplined, and you've got to be aggressive if you're going to get galleries. And most artists, a lot of us, are kind of introverted. We enjoy being by ourselves. We enjoy working by ourselves. I mean, it's an isolating thing. But and you have to know business, and we don't know business at all. And so it's hard. And sometimes, you know, it'd be nice to have a regular paycheck. You know, the security of, okay, this is, you know, you can retire at this age because you've put this much in. You know, it's a struggle.
Would you have it any other way? Would you ever do anything else instead? Would you ever give up being an artist?
No, because I don't work well under other people.
Huh.
I like the independence. I like the fact that I am making the decisions, and you are making the decisions with your art. You know, it's when I was in high school, I would waitress, and I did some in college, and that didn't somehow working under someone. I could see that it was not going to be for me.
Huh.
And so that's why all these other things I did, they were fairly independent. I mean, yes, we had a principal at the school, but he gave everybody free rein, you know.
And counseling, you're on your own in a
room. That's right.
So basically you've always been like an independent agent.
Right.
Huh, interesting. Huh. And as an artist, you automatically feel that what you're doing on the picture is probably the best thing to do. And so in your life, you've probably thought that what I'm doing is the best thing that I could be doing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's who I am. I mean, I'm happiest when I'm doing the artwork. I'm calmest. I mean, I can feel the stress leaving me, but it's the best thing for me.
Mm-hmm. Is your work trying to say anything like that? Is your work saying this is the mark of an independent woman? This is what she sees in the world. This is how she deals with the world.
Some of it, yes. I mean, and some of it's straightforward, just nice art. But some of it is addressing, like the three pieces that the Cedar Rapids that are part of the Cedar Rapids Museum permanent collection. There's a lot of sexual innuendo in those pieces, and like the V Zip It too. There was a person that came into the house for something, and he goes, and in the entryway he goes, "Oh, these are all really sexual, aren't they?" And he picked up on it. Yeah, so there is some power in some of these pieces.
Deliberately?
Yes.
Intended? Huh. Pretty risque.
Maybe for Iowa. I'm sorry, we're in Iowa.
Yeah.
And I don't do barns.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't do... Well, but yet I did Grant Wood's stuff. I mean, when they had that, I can't think what it was called, American Gothic on Parade or something in Cedar Rapids, I did that. I mean, I've done Herky on Parade. You know, you do other things too that also help you learn new skills. I just had a friend that did, first time, did two of the Herkies on Parade. And she goes, that was really eye-opening because it taught me to think differently. Because the proportions of these things were way out of proportion. Yes. Well, the head, like I made a bike helmet. I did Ragbri this year. Did a bike helmet. Well, it was 2 feet long by 18 inches wide. And I made it out of those swim floats. You cut them in half with a hot wire and, you know, you cover them with fabric and glue the whole thing. But she goes, that really helped me expand as an artist because I was having to learn new things.
And then that you can apply that back to the stuff that you've done before.
Right, right. And some artists will say, well, you know, that's just commercial. You shouldn't be doing stuff like that. Right? It's like, no, you know, you've got to, these things really open your eyes and it's fun. And it also gets people that are not interested in sculpture interested. Families can interact with these things, and it's a good, fun time.
Mm-hmm. I remember back when I used to paint on mailboxes.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, my gosh, here I am. I have an MFA, and I'm painting on a mailbox with an acrylic marker.
But, you know, it's there are just so many different things. I mean, hey, there's Elvis on Velvet. I mean, you know. And there are just so many different things that we do try.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I used to make coasters. I make, you know.
Is your cooking like your painting, like your art?
Yes. Except my daughter is a much better cook.
Huh.
But now that she's married, I don't get her to cook as often.
Unless
I can say, hey, how about we split a meal and you can take some of yours home.
You can come and visit me. Well, good. We're talking to Elizabeth Rhodes Reed, .com if you want to follow along. And she has a show right now at the Renee Gray Gallery in downtown LeClaire, just right up the road from Davenport and down the road from Dubuque, with Dawn Wolford Metallo until the 26th, Wednesday through Sunday. Time now for a short break. Let's take it, and we'll be right back after this gallery guide.
On exhibit around the WVIK listening area, on continuing exhibit at the Renee Gray Gallery at 101 South Cody Road in LeClaire, Scored and Surfaced, works in various media by 9 artists. Hours are 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day except Sunday. At Roztalks at 2108 3rd Avenue in Rock Island, on continuing exhibit, Object Permanence, works by 20 local artists. Hours are 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. Tuesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. on Sunday. at the Galesburg Civic Arts Center on East Main Street in Galesburg through August 2nd, works by Michael Acera and Walter Arnold. Through July 24th, works by Yvonne Hamm. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10:30 to 4:30, Saturday from 10:30 to 3. At the Muscatine Art Center at 1314 Mulberry Avenue in Muscatine, through the end of August, wood carvings by Norman Bunn. Through January 25th, Railroads of Muscatine County. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Thursday evening 7 to 9, Saturdays and Sundays from 1 to 5. At the Dubuque Museum of Art at 701 Locust Street in Dubuque through August 3rd, from the permanent collection Ilse Silteman's Holzer through September 1st, Edward S. Curtis and Thomas Moran. The Grant Wood Gallery's on continuing exhibit. Hours of Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Thursdays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturdays and Sundays, 1 to 4. At the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art at 410 3rd Avenue in Cedar Rapids, through September 7th, Carl Van Vechten, photographer to the stars, through November 2nd, Marvin Cohn on My Mind, The Ceramics of Dean Schwartz. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area.
Back on Art Talks. If you've just joined us, ElizabethRhodesReed.com is with us. This program and many, many previous programs going back about 2 years are available on our website, wvik.org. Click on the schedule button at the top of the page and scroll on down to Art Talks on Thursday nights at 7, and they will appear by date, name of the artist, and a brief description of what kind of work they do or what they're about. Elizabeth Rhodes Reed will probably call you a textural, three-dimensional...
Fiber artist.
Nice, fiber artist. Tell us about Cedar Rapids. There's an art scene in Cedar Rapids that's re-emerging after the 2008 flood, but you've always had something there. You had CSPS with Mal Andringa. You had a number of galleries. You have a wonderful museum downtown with all the Grant Wood stuff and the Lisansky stuff and other shows that come through. I remember I saw a show of Cat Chow, those fabric pieces,
right,
that she did, those clothing things. Very creative. Wow, what marvelous stuff. And Cedar Rapids is good restaurants, nice places, mm-hmm, to live. And you're up in that area. So what is the art scene like up there?
Well, it's changing and it's getting stronger. We have a new director at the museum, Sean Ulmer, who had been the curator. And in the last several years, he has said, Eastern Iowa has the most richest area of all these fabulous artists. So he went around and went to a lot of artists' studios, and he goes and collected works for the permanent collection of the museum, because he felt it was kind of lacking. He goes, you know, we don't have all these. And he has been so supportive of the artists and the artist community. We're getting, I know there's some new galleries that have opened. After the flood in 08, the Nubo District has completely turned around. I mean, these buildings were completely flooded. I mean, they've got the lines as to, yeah, it was up at the ceiling, whatever. And yeah, we've got a whole... it's just like a whole new center. I mean, they've got an independent bookstore. The restaurants, the coffee shops down in the Nouveau District. Galleries are going strong. I mean, the Cherry Building has artists in it. They have some galleries. There's the whole ceramic center, which is fabulous, and they bring in people. Czech Village has come back. Czech Museum has been moved. It's beautiful now. They're working on getting some little shops in the Czech Village, which is across the river from the Nouveau District, which where is the CSPS Hall. Mm-hmm. That building is fabulous. Mm. That is completely renovated with top to the top of art. Windows, everything.
Is the audience there for the artist?
Yes. It is hard to, on a weekend, to find a parking place down there. It is packed.
That's good news.
Yes, it is. Really exciting things happening. But Mel and John have always been very supportive and have always brought in interesting things, you know, because... You know, basically, sometimes you think of Cedar Rapids as, you know, kind of a blue-collar town, but it's not. I mean, there's a lot of different things happening.
Mm-hmm. And you're close to Iowa City, too, half hour away.
Yes,
yeah. Is there much tie-in with Iowa City, or are you a separate entity?
No, I think there's a crossover. But, I mean, you know, you also have your own events that are happening in your community that you're supportive of and events that are happening there.
Uh-huh. Do you go down?
But there is a culture. It's called a cultural corridor. And so, you know, you've got your all these things, and the newspaper is trying to promote so that you know this is happening here and this is happening here. Or, well, you know, you can go on the internet, you know what's happening here. I mean, but yeah, there's a lot of cooperation that's going on. I mean, I've even heard of a new thing that's starting in Anamosa, which isn't far away. You know, that's Grantwood country. That whole thing's starting. So.
That's good. Arts is a cultural tourism, and it's one of the leading reasons that people will go into a community to see what's going on there.
Well, and to see what's happened to Mount Vernon. I mean, they've really gotten involved with the arts, and they have, I think it's called Chalk the Walk or something, and these beautiful pictures that people do on the sidewalks or the streets with chalk. And I mean, it's an event, but it's also engaging the community.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I've always loving to see that. Are you involved with the arts community in Cedar Rapids? Are you on a committee or a commission?
No, but I am involved with the arts. In fact, there's about seven or eight of us that we've formed a group, Cedar River Artisans, and we're due shows, or we try and get some public works. We just did one for between the Eastern Iowa Art Academy and Alliant, where we went into the school, went into one specific school with these students and taught them about sculpture of found items, and then made a piece that is displayed in the Alliant Tower.
And why found items?
Well, because it was for Alliant or Iowa Electric or whatever it was, and we proposed using stuff from their stockpile.
So you're using stuff that they give you that you could use.
Yeah, you could go through their stuff and but I mean, like, the face is fabulous. It's melted down glass insulators. You know, you make a form out of your clay, and then you melt your glass insulators, or you make a form. You make a plastic form.
Interesting. What color?
Kind of
cleary.
Well, there was the green and the blues and the clear. So you've got, and since you've got a form already, you know.
Your art goes in all different directions, doesn't it? You're making art for galleries, and you're making art for schools, and you're making art in the community, and you're making art in everything that you're touching.
Well, yeah, because you've always have to, as an artist, you always have to keep evolving, because you can get stale. If you are not trying new things, or, you know, adding new things to your old ideas, you're going to get stale, and it's not going to be, you're going to lose it. lose your creativity, I think. Mm. You always have to be pushing yourself. You always have to try something new. It might not work out. It might not work out, but at least you've seen what the item can do, the property, and just, it's an exploration. Mm-hmm. Art is an exploration.
That's good. It is. How do you push yourself to do that? Is it just whatever comes by you, or do you go looking for it? It's the discovery.
It's just always there. I mean, you know, a friend was cleaning out a dentist office, and he just came across all these things. I don't know how I'm going to use some of these things, but they are interesting. The little plates that they put in your mouth with the cement stuff mm-hmm. on them. I'm trying to think. Oh, there were a whole array of weird stuff, but it might evolve into something. I mean, you always have to see how it looks together. In fact, one of my favorite pieces was the packaging from, and I can't think what it was, but it was like these little green squares, and they were just absolutely gorgeous. They were three-dimensional, but it was paper, and it was meant as a packing material. But for a year or so, I was able to show it, and now it's disintegrating. As you watch, well, the color is bleaching out of it. It is just evolving into, it will go back to what it was nothing.
Oh, interesting. And you're okay with your work disappearing like that?
Yeah. Well, one of my people that I admire is Ava Hess.
Sure.
And because I know that her work is dissolving right now or disintegrating. I mean, it's hard when some of these things, as they age,
will go. But that's the transient nature of humanity, and a lot of artists are involved in transient art that disappears or is up for a few weeks and then is down.
Mm-hmm.
Even someone like Christo, whose work is just up wrapping something or flowing through something, and then it goes down, and all the pieces are donated off. Very interesting. Huh. So you're kind of on top of the art scene from the area, from the Midwest.
Well, because a lot of my friends are artists.
Right, and that would explain that. Do you show in any other galleries than around the area here?
Not in the area. Well, in Cedar Rapids at the Wiederspan Gallery,
mm-hmm.
and then I have a gallery out in California and a gallery in Florida.
How do you find these galleries, or do they find you?
Some find me, and sometimes I find them. Or a friend will say, hey, have you thought about looking there? It's hard to find galleries because there are so many wonderful artists out there that are looking for representation. And, you know, it just depends on the luck. I mean, like I was with a gallery in Madison. She just closed last year. But I happened upon her at the same time she was looking for a specific piece for a client, and it just happened to be mine.
Hmm.
And then it just took off from there, and then I had several shows with her, and, you know, her clients, you know, got to know my work and liked it. So, you know, things like that. The one in Florida that happened to be a friend's, they called and said, I was just down here, and your stuff would look beautiful in here. And it was summertime, so that's a downtime when it's so hot and humid down there. And I just contacted the person, and she, yep. I mean, it just went like that.
Hmm.
I mean, sometimes I've applied, and you're also going to get rejection, and some people won't even respond to you. I mean, if you're looking for galleries, but and that's the business side of it, which is hard.
What, did it take you a long time to learn it?
No.
No?
I mean, I just, because someone said, oh, you're not supposed to just walk into a gallery. Yeah, I do, and if they don't, you know, whatever. Or call them or talk to them. I mean, we all approach things differently.
Mm-hmm. So you're kind of fearless then, aren't you?
Yeah, you have to be.
Huh. You're not afraid of rejection?
No. In fact, I think that's one of the things that artists like or something, or something we're prone to. It's like when I first started out, I knew I had to build up a resume, so you'd do the juried shows, and I didn't research them well enough. And if the jurist is not, since the jurist, they're just as subjective as everybody else. And if they're not into your type of art, you're not going to get into the show. And so all you've done is basically pay for rejection.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess, you know, we're kind of masochistic in a way that, you know.
Well, you're always hoping to get that great show. And
I know. But if you don't do your research, you're just me throwing money down the drain.
Mm. And you have to ship it, and you have to drive it there and pick it up, and mm-hmm. it's that whole thing. Plus, you get that notice in the mail saying no.
Yeah. And you're going, oh, I love that piece. Well, and that was when you still had to do slides.
Yeah.
And not everybody's good at doing slides.
I remember the slides. Are you good at doing digital images now of your work?
Yeah, not too bad, because you can straighten them up and you can do all these other, you know, add the lighting and stuff like that.
Nice.
It's still not as good as I'd like.
Huh. So you're a multifaceted artist. You're an activist. You're involved in the community. You're involved with people. You're involved with your work. You're having shows in multiple places. And you have three or four galleries that are keeping you going.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a good life. You're surviving, you're prospering?
Both. Sometimes you prosper, sometimes you survive. You know, it's one of those things.
It is. Well, Elizabeth Rhodes Reed, we've reached the end of our hour. Once again, your show at the Renee Gray Gallery on Cody Road, just right on up the street in LeClaire. On the right-hand side, Rene Gray Suite, a good-looking place inside, good windows. And your show will be there until the 26th, and then Elizabeth Rhodes, R-H-O-A-D-E-S, Reed.
R-H-O-A-D-S.
O-A-D-S, Reed, R-E-A-D.com for more on your work and other places that you can see. Very good. Time for our last question. What advice do you have from your time for young artists? What can you tell them?
Well, don't be afraid to try anything. Experiment. Build your resume. Know who your audience is. Always have an element of surprise. And if things don't go your way, don't get down on yourself. Just pick up your studio and just keep going at it, because that's what all of us artists do. We just have to keep going at it, because it's your passion. It's your life.
Well said. Well said. Thank you very much. That's it for us today on Art Talks. Many thanks to our guests. Many thanks to our audio engineer, that maestro of sound, Dave Garner. Until next week, have a great night and a fine tomorrow. See you soon, Laura.
Support for Art Talks comes from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com.